We're calling this Innovative Strategies to Retain Workforce. We have five, count them, five great sources for ideas about ways to keep and cultivate talent. One reason we asked all five of these folks to join us today is because they were all, their companies were all finalists in December's Best Places to Work competition, I guess we call it, where companies are rated based on their own employees' surveys. So these folks know how to run quality workplaces that have talented and happy people coming to work every day. So you all came from Best Places to Work companies. Basically, with Best Places to Work, if someone enters Best Places to Work, we send surveys to everyone who works at that company in all different sizes of companies, from 10 employees up to hundreds, and we ask them to rate their employer based on other factors, and then they're all judged, and whoever scores highest are finalists and then a champion. First, let's do introductions, I guess. I totally forgot that. Give us your one-minute spiels on who you are, how you got to where you are, and what you do at your company. Jennifer, you want to start us?
Sure. So I'm Jennifer Bauer. I'm the Chief People and Strategy Officer, as well as General Counsel at Delta Dental of Kansas. And I've been there for about 9 years, and I had a weird journey getting there, from family law to criminal law to all sorts of different types of things, working from the court. But then somehow ended up in insurance. And so, you know, insurance is hated, so are lawyers, so I get both.
I'm Jamie Harrison. I am the Chief Growth Officer at Meritrust Credit Union. I have allergies. I am not contagious. I've been there 19 years, and I've done pretty much almost everything except for accounting and IT.
I am John Ford. I work at Tesserae, formerly GL&B Architecture. So we just recently went through a name change about 2-3 weeks ago, so still living that process out. But I'm a homegrown kid. I'm from here, not born here, but have been here forever, and raising a family and developing and going through that process, but spent a lot of time at different companies here in town and very glad for this opportunity here.
I'm Amanda Rock. I work for Poet Biofuels here in Wichita. I'm actually just right across the street from the stoplight there. I've been there for about a year and a few months, so newer to Poet, but not new to recruiting and talent acquisition. I've been doing that for about 10 plus years now. Love it. I've tried to leave it, but hated it and then came back to it. So, just kind of happy to be here at Wichita Local as well.
I'm Carrie Cox. I lead our HR consulting practice, actually, at AGH. So I'm not responsible for the internal HR, which means I bring a little bit of a different perspective to this group. But I've worked there over 17 years, resisted working in HR for a long time. So really didn't want to do that, but was drawn to it and have enjoyed it and really appreciate getting to help organizations build their people practices.
Great. Thank you all. Okay, you're all Best Places to Work companies. Take 1 minute each and talk about why your company is a great place to work. Jennifer, you want to start?
Absolutely. So we, at the foundation of our organization, it's our employees. And I see one of our fabulous employees. By the way, I get to work with the great Kara Hunt. She is our actual VP of HR. But it's employees like Kara who are the foundation of our organization. And we have taken, and Chelsea said it best, we've made a concerted effort over the past several years to really focus in on how can we engage our employees that we already have, and how can we create a culture that people want to join and stay there for a long time. And so part of that has been our focus on various different areas, such as recognition, our feedback. I mean, we are constantly surveying our employees and asking them for feedback during our strategic planning initiatives. So we're constantly reaching out to them, asking them for ideas, because the best innovation starts with the employees, not with us on the leadership team. And then we also focus on, you know, training. People come in to our organizations wanting career development. They want training, so we're focusing on that, as well as other areas. So it's all the different concerted things that we look at to be able to give to our workforce, to engage them, make sure they stay, and then also to be able to attract and retain talent from the outside.
That's excellent. I also echo everything about anything that the employee wants to make them better and develop and grow them. But for Meritrust, I think it's a little bit different in, it's a very special, unique place, and I think it attracts different kind of talent. So how I like to explain it, which is not a PC way to explain it at all, I feel that I have a very split personality where half of me loves the innovation and strategy of business and moving us forward and being very progressive. And then the other half of me loves the heart of our mission of taking care of our customers and our members, and that's literally our purpose. And so I feel that Meritrust does such a good job of aligning both of those. If I were to work at a corporate entity, this side would be happy and this side wouldn't be happy. If I were to work for a nonprofit, this side would be happy, but this side wouldn't be happy. And so I think it's unique to find a place that actually aligns both of those. And it just seems to attract those kinds of people that want to be progressive and innovative at the same time, but yet have something inside of them that just wants to serve others.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mentioned earlier that we just went through the name change, but our identity changed a long time ago. Formerly GLMV Architecture, we are not a company of four individuals that have owned or, you know, founded this organization. We are a company of the future and very forward thinking, and that's where that tesserae came from. It just means to weave everything we do together. It's all about togetherness with our clients, with our community, everything that we're doing. And so we live that piece out, and we want to continue that. And so formally, I've only been with the company now for about 2 years, we were scared to submit for the best places to work because we had to respond to the problems that came out in the survey. That was the honest information that I was given when asked, why don't we do this, right? We were scared of changing, and we were scared of improving. And we want to just knock that in the teeth and say, every single day we have to grow. We talk about all the time moving the needle. How do we do that? It doesn't matter what department you are. How do you move the needle forward for the business? And that is a huge focus, and we just try to live it out in all of the interactions that we do.
Okay, now that I'm fourth, I'm like trying to think of
find something new to talk about.
I can say, because it's really such an amalgamation of the same or similar things mm-hmm. that make a company great to work for. I think for Poet, it's, you know, kind of like Jamie, like you were saying, it's that combination, almost juxtaposition of like, you know, we are innovative thinkers, right, at Poet. So that's kind of who we want to attract, who we want to come work for us is people that have that fire, you know, within mm-hmm. them, that innate passion and drive. They're intrinsically motivated. You know, everyone is always asking, hey, is there a better way, right? That innovative mindset. But also who we are is, I describe this to candidates, sometimes it's cheesy, but I'm gonna go ahead and say it. To me, it's like driving down a dirt road that you grew up on. You know, it's just you have that sense of belonging. I grew up on a dirt road. I was raised to, hey, you wave even if you don't know who it is. So that's how my upbringing has been at Poet, is just very much a, hey, glad you're here. Let's partner together. I would also say that level of entrepreneurship. My personal story, my leader has allowed me to be such an entrepreneur in my role. I've been able to build, honestly, a recruitment strategy kind of from scratch, mm-hmm. But then also have my hiring managers embrace that and partner with me and just welcome me with open arms with all of my crazy ideas. I see one of them in the audience there, so that's what motivates me is that kind of ability to be an entrepreneur, think outside the box, but also take a step back and celebrate wins. So know how to, yeah, it's pedal to the metal a lot, but also we know how to take a step back and say, hey, look around, look what we've accomplished. Let's mm-hmm. celebrate for a minute. Yeah, I could go on and on, but that's the big ones.
Last, always great for those questions. So I think what really attracted me to AGH culturally when I first started, which was 17 plus years ago, was I realized that we really live to our values and we work to our client's success or work for our client's success. And when I first started at AGH, I recognized that I got to work with a lot of really smart and dedicated people. And that's just built throughout the culture that we really try to live our values and work to achieve what our clients want to achieve and help support them with that. And then if I bring it in a little bit more where I think about my own team and how we help to build our own team, we tend to be pretty collaborative. We really work on team building within our group, so we kind of live what we preach to our clients as well. So we focus on activities. Sometimes it's just for fun and getting to know each other a little bit better. Sometimes it's working on some of the hard things where you can't get along with your teammates 100% every time, so we have to recognize we have some conflict and challenges, and how do we work through that so that we can be a more effective team overall? And I think that that kind of permeates throughout our culture as well.
Let's start here. One question that we always like to ask emerging leaders and career women when we get together for discussions is how your workplaces have changed pre-pandemic to now, pre-pandemic, during the pandemic, and now. We've got insurance companies, we've got banks, we've got architecture firm, accounting, and everything else. You know, pretty traditional type companies. Has culture changed hard? Has it changed much since the pandemic in terms of adaptability, flexibility, things like that? And talk about what those changes were like. And anybody can start.
All right, guys, I'll take it.
Start. So we were a company in 2020 that worked solely in the office. Like, we had absolutely no one, with the exception of our sales team and our PR team, who actually went out into the field and talked to our stakeholders. So we had, in 1 week, to figure out how to send all of our employees home to be able to work. Otherwise, they were not going to have a job. We weren't going to be able to pay folks to answer phone calls, to process claims, to do all the things that we as an insurance company do. And so we had our leadership team and members of various teams going out there purchasing every computer we could get off the shelf at Costco, Sam's, Walmart, wherever, we were getting it. And so we had to figure out, because we are a traditional company, I mean, we're like insurance, everybody works in the office and it's a 9-to-5 job and it's, you know, very traditional, but we had to figure out how do you manage a remote workforce at that point. And we were remote for a good year and a half to 2 years until we brought people back in. Now, there is value in remote work. There is value in working in the office. So we've adapted to a remote hybrid type situation where 2 days a week we're remote, 2 days or 3 days a week there are collaboration days. But what we learned throughout all of that is flexibility. You know, in the past, it'd be like, oh, well, if I had to go to the doctor, you know, oh, well, try to do that on your own time. Make sure that you do that before work or after work, or take some time off. Make sure you log it as sick leave. Versus now, where it's, yeah, absolutely. You know what? You can make up the time whenever you need to. We have, you know, our managers have been trained. But it's all about engaging, and it's all about flexibility. And engaging a remote workforce, and I know that you all know this, but that is so hard to keep remote employees as engaged as your workforce that's in the office. And so it's a delicate balancing act, I think, for us, but it's absolutely changed.
I would say, looking at it from pre-pandemic, while I wasn't there, I mean, that culture stuck around even through some of that pandemic. And we were lucky and fortunate at the time when COVID hit. They had just prepared and moved over to different systems to where it really allowed people to work from home, so they lucked out on that. But one of the biggest things and changes that we've seen is that we understand the world's not going back to normal. The normal has changed, and we have to be at the forefront of that and not responding to it, but being proactive about that. And so we've been very intentional about that. And so since I started, and knowing that we have some of the big projects that are coming for us, we needed to expand our team. And in just the past 2 years, we've hired over 100 individuals. And it's not just the Wichita, Casey, Houston, where we have offices, and now Independence as well. But we've expanded that. We went from 3 states to 24, right, in a very small amount of time. And when you start to look at our people page and understanding who those are, there's a lot of fresh faces there. And how do we go back and maintain in a culture that we want, but create a culture that we want through newer individuals while keeping some of the OGs, if you will, and part of that process. And so it's been really interesting. There's been a lot of education surrounding it, but we've been changing the perspective of why we have to be flexible, why we have to respond, and how we can compete.
Before I go on to our next question, I'll just throw this in. We have some data in this week's print edition of the Business Journal, and it'll be online Friday as well. But we have 45 markets in American cities' business journals, and we did a data dump on all of them. Where do you think Wichita ranks in terms of percentage of downtown employees who are back in the office? High, low, middle? We're number one. Our people are back to work, and I think we've kind of sensed that over the past few years, but I just thought that was an interesting piece of data. All of you have to do with talent acquisition in some form or another. One of you has it in their title, and maybe we'll start with you because you do. Talk about once you have somebody in the door, it's an A-plus employee, it's an A-plus get. How important is it at that point not to drop the ball with everything you either promised or sold them on, and now you got to deliver? How much of a danger is missing out on some of those things?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's the ultimate criticality of, right? Sometimes it's, you know, finding that unicorn, in a sense, for a particular, it's like, That's kind of honestly what I've used as a selling point to some of my hiring managers of, hey, you know, I can get us this far, but once they're in the door, right, it's your turn now, you know, so take care of them, you know. So I think, yeah, it's very critical. I think, in terms of, you know, I don't sit around biting my nails worried about it. Because I know my customers, I know my hiring managers are going to do the right thing and you know, take care of you know, the team member. But I think honestly, the work that I do, that the team, the recruiting team that I work with, we try very hard to bring in talent that is already just intrinsically motivated. You know, they're bringing in those values that we're seeking, that we know we're taking a pretty clear, you know, bet on them that they're going to come in, they're going to stick around, because we've already identified through our strong screening process, our strong interview process of screening for the right values and principles. We know, you know, that's more than half the battle of getting folks to stay, honestly. So
I see some head nods there. Who would like to chime in?
I'll add just a little bit. Sorry, John. Okay. I think it's really important just to connect people. So you do such a good job of talking about your brand, getting them to come into your organization, and then how do you actually experience that in a way that they see you living it? And if there's a gap there with your managers that are managing those employees, then you need to fix that gap. So making sure the employees feel really connected, making sure opportunity is a word I heard earlier in the presentation a couple of times. Do they understand what their opportunities are for the long-term growth in your organization? Because that's really important to a lot of people. So helping train your hiring managers with those things is really important too, not just how do we connect people, but how do we help with that opportunity and developing our employees so that they want to stick, so that they see that long-term path for them and they really do align with what you're trying to do in your organization.
Just to add to it, I think one of the big shifts from when I was kind of growing up and looking for jobs and working through those opportunities, the interview process has, I think it has to transition from a true interview to a conversation, right? In the past, we've always looked at resumes and scoured them and went through and asked critical questions about these situations, but I think it's so important that we know who you're hiring before you just walk in, and it's a relationship-based thing. It's a mutual relationship, and we have to be able to call it what it is, and we have to prepare for those conversations, and so we've worked with our managers. I had a manager this week that's new to our firm, and she asked, hey, is there a list of questions or anything? And I said, absolutely not, no, because at that point, we're getting away from what the goal is. We're hiring a human. That human doesn't want to come to this job to, you know, they don't want to really, right? We have to. It's America. It's part of the process. But in the same sense, how can we make this something that they truly love and that they're passionate about? And so we build our workforce on the passions of those individuals versus trying to understand what can they do, right? What opportunities do they have? What innovations can they bring? It's building into that and understanding why they wake up in the morning, tells me that we want to hire them.
Can culture succeed without, well, culture, career development, things like that, can that succeed without CEO buy-in? I'm looking across this and I see strong CEOs at every microphone. Not, you aren't the CEOs, but you have CEOs who are. But can you imagine, and Carrie, you probably have seen this from time to time, CEOs that aren't buying in, and can it be a cancer?
Yeah, HR or managers can only do so much. So if the C-suite, and I would say more than just the CEO, the C-suite is not bought in, it's hard to change culture. And if we're stuck in the past of, oh, this is how we did it 20 years ago or 10 years ago, and we're not ready to see the future and how we need to innovate and adapt, then it's just really challenging. You can change in pockets. You can have managers that are really dedicated. You can have HR that is really pushing, but it takes time and it takes a lot of patience to shift that if you don't have the C-suite bought in.
So I have a good example that combines kind of the COVID question and this question and our C-suite. So everything that they talked about in terms of all the flexibility that changed during COVID, we had one thing that just, it still blows my mind sometimes, but this is the generation that's coming in, and these are the new demands of the workforce that we have to respond to. And we started noticing a trend during COVID, after COVID, that people were calling in sick because they were sad. And that's the first time that someone of my age, not Generation Z, had heard that. You know, we're all like, you know, suck it up, buttercup, we're all sad. But it was... After it became a trend, you know, we, as a C-suite person, you know, we started talking about it and talking to the CEO, who at first was like, the same thing, you know, we're all dealing with things. We still have to come to work. We still have to do our job. That's just part of growing up and being responsible. But what we did was take another look at it from the other perspective and try to understand, are we providing the right conversations, opportunities, education for mental health? This is obviously something that is funneling to the top, where we aren't doing something right. We're missing something here. There's a big disconnect. And at the level that it was coming in, it was becoming quite alarming. And so that really changed our shift in thinking in terms of, okay, we get it. You know, we can't solve all the world's problems with every mental health issue that we have. But at the same time, we can provide these pathways and these opportunities and these connections and make it more of a conversation where it's not taboo, you know, and kudos to them for calling in and saying, I'm sad, I'm not coming in today. You know, we probably have all wanted to do that, but we just don't do it. But it's just a different mindset, and it's not a bad thing. You know, it's a good thing. And so I really do celebrate our leadership team and our CEO that, you know, our first responses were normal responses. But at the same time, we also took another look at it to say, okay, we have a deficiency here that we obviously need to address. And we did, and we addressed it. Mm-hmm.
I think one thing, especially about our industry, because we're now more than architecture. We have engineering, visualization. There's all sorts of services, planning services. So what we're doing is a change, and we've grown from that change. And if we did not have buy-in from the top down, there's no possible way that we could pursue that. And our CEO, president, he's been with the firm since he was a student intern coming out of college. So he's 21 years in, 22 years in. And leading, and he saw both sides of that. Architecture, again, is very, very traditional. People have to be at the table to make that work happen, to now transitioning over to where he made a comment the other day of, we want to get to the point where we don't need PTO, right? We don't need those things because, again, we're hiring adults. There's an expectation of those individuals, and we have to hold them accountable to that. But we also have to create an environment of a sense of belonging, if you will, that they can do something. Again, being an ESOP is a very powerful thing because any changes, any impacts the greater good. We talk about firm first, not friends first, right? What do we need to do for us as a whole? And we preach that from the top down, and everyone's bought in. It's just an incredible change of pace just in the 2 years since I've been there.
Jamie mentioned the adjustment in thinking. I'm curious, what other out-of-the-box employee benefits have you all found or heard of that have been effective? And Jamie's ready to answer.
One of our biggest ones, we have a sabbatical program, and that is completely unheard of today, typically, unless you're in academia. But after you've been there for 10 years, which I know sounds like a long time, you get to take a month off. And I've had two now in my career at Meritrust. And the first time that I took it, it actually was incredibly unnerving for me because you are cut off from everything. It is a true sabbatical to where they cut off your email. You will literally be fired if you try to do any of your work or contact any of people that report to you. And I've never been in that situation. I mean, we've all taken extended vacations and done this, but as an executive, you're always attached to something. And this was the first time, you know, the first 2 days, I'm like, I don't know what to do with myself. I don't know what to do. And then by day three, it was like the world had just lifted off my shoulders and I just could do and just breathe and think. And I remember coming back to my CEO after I returned and I'm like, you know, I was very nervous about doing this, but I have to thank you. I mean, I've never had a gift like that to where you literally get a month to your life of just not being connected to work. And I can't even remember a time when it was like that. And so telling those stories over and over again to our new employees who are coming in, they want that. I mean, they've even been asking, at 5 years, can we do 2 weeks? You know, can we do this kind of thing? But there's something special about that. And I love it from the aspect that it's, you know, a twofold. It gives you a break as an employee, but at the same time, you're teaching your staff to step up and do your job as well. So that's one of our biggest things. We have everything else that everybody else has, but the sabbatical is pretty awesome.
What other unorthodox things have you all found to be effective?
So it's not unorthodox, and I'm sure most of you have it, but what we've been seeing and hearing from is career development, leadership training, skills training. And there are some employees that come in and they haven't finished their college educations, which is very important to us, haven't finished their master's programs, haven't finished whatever skills trainings. And so in the last couple of years, we've really beefed up our education assistance program. And so there are several of our employees who are finishing college for the first time since they got out in the workforce and left college. They're able to get their master's programs and work it into their job. We're being flexible and working with them. We recently hired an employee who's still working. She's still in college and she's finishing up this semester, but we're working with her and being flexible on when she's going to class and when we need her to work. And, you know, it's flexibility. It's making sure that they understand that we are giving them and working with them on their education, because that's important. People now are demanding it, and we should be giving it. And so we've responded to that education need as well.
I think that one thing that's important to say is as you look at and go through this process of understanding those types of benefits that maybe you do need, you got to look at your staff. And, you know, for us, one of the big things is, again, very traditional company, very traditional policies, but we've never had a very forward-thinking process about, you know, families wanting to become families, right? And so we've looked at that and thought about that and understood that we have to do better. We can't have our younger individuals that are coming into the workforce, we know who we're going to be hiring. Those individuals coming into the workforce that are looking to start families be stressed by the situation of starting a family. Everything is expensive right now. I couldn't even imagine going through this process. But as a young dad of four, right, going through this, I sat there and said, we need to take that burden away from them. So we implemented something that we had when I was in my days at Textron, salary continuation. Every single individual from day one, perfect example, we had a new hire just a few weeks ago, second week. She was in a terrible car accident on the way home from work and was in ICU for a number of days, had no idea what bills are going to be happening, all those types of things. I'm like, don't worry about us because we're going to continue to take care of you. And on top of that, looking at what you're in your first 30 days, can we alter some benefits here to help you out a little bit? Like looking at the true opportunities to help that individual out. And so it was so critically important to me that the things that maybe I didn't have growing up through this process that all of our staff has.
I was going to say, related to that would be looking at your benefits and what you offer. So do you have family planning services covered on your plan?
A lot of places don't still. Do you have adoption benefits? A lot of places don't still. Do you have benefits that are helping people transition, not just with family, starting a family, but also as they're getting older and some of the changes that are just natural to life? So making sure that those more tangible benefits are also covered for your people. And a lot of times that doesn't impact a lot of your employees, but it's really significant for the ones that it does impact.
This is a bit of a follow-up, but it's also going to talent attraction as well as retention. Talking about those benefits for employees, but where does compensation rank now? I can remember, I just wanted to know how much I was going to make my first jobs, and I wanted to know how much my raise was going to be. Is that important now to especially younger employees, but all employees, as other benefits of the job?
I would say it's a very high importance. What we've seen in the trend that's been happening is that no matter what, as we start to pursue others like in Integra, you're looking at, you know, hiring people from out of state, but you got to control where your ranges are, you know, internally. So we cannot do damage to ourselves in that sense. We have to be very proactive and think about that. But it's one of the most important things. How do we compete with the bigger companies out there? Being in Kansas City, we have all the big architecture firms that are just coming at us all the time. How do we compete in that market and stay very in front of it? And so I've partnered with great companies here to look at compensation, understanding that analysis, keeping it very recent. It's critically important, and you have to be having that conversation constantly.
Kind of knowing how to navigate the conversation, too, with the candidate you're speaking to, right? Are they from the younger generation? Are they from the older generation? And just kind of knowing more about what they care about and then knowing how to speak to that point, right? Sometimes you can get on a bad habit of just giving your normal soapbox spiel of here's our comp philosophy, but sometimes the trick is knowing how to have that conversation a little bit tailored to the candidate. Mm-hmm. What do you care about most? Oh, is it 401k? Oh, is it our quarterly profit sharing you want to know most about? Great, let's talk about that versus just giving them the one-size-fits-all kind of a thing. Not all folks from all generations are connected to the value of some of these different quarterly profit sharing programs that are out there. They just want, pay me my base. You know, I want my base. Well, hold on. There's more to it than that. Let me fill you in on this. By the way, we have a tremendous, you know, culture. Our work environment is top tier. So sometimes that total compensation conversation is really pivotal when it comes to having those conversations and just knowing your audience.
Carrie?
What I generally tell my clients is it's a really important thing, but it's not the only thing. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have compensation right, the other pieces don't matter. People won't even pay attention to you. So it's not the only thing. It's not the most important thing, but it's really important to have that right in terms of compensation. So the door's even open for the rest of the conversation about culture and the other benefits and all of the other pieces that you offer.
It's something that we've gone so far as to completely change how we have that conversation. Now, I have that control, you know, where I work, how we navigate that conversation. And we've moved on from coming with a number. We come up with the offer together. Once again, we've gotten to know each other at this process. We've worked together. We've built the relationship. Now let's do this piece of it too. How do we make all these puzzle pieces fit perfectly to understand where do you need to be? And let's start from that spot. Is it more important for you to have that vacation? And while I sit there and say in the interview, and when we're talking about that compensation conversation, I'll sit there and say, I don't care about vacation, because what I'm hiring you to do is a job. And I do truly believe that you're going to accomplish that job any way you see to do it. And so we have to be flexible and open to that. But having that conversation of like, we can make this for you. This job offer is for you. And that includes your passions, your personalities. Do we need to allow time for that? Do we need to think about those things that early on? It's very important to change how we're having that conversation.
I think that's become one of the biggest changes is understanding they want to be known. They do. They want you to know their personality, and they want you to understand their value proposition thresholds and to tailor that to them. So I agree absolutely. Absolutely, Carrie, with what you said. If compensation isn't there to begin with, the rest of the conversation can't happen. But the other parts of that personalization, they're so impactful. And that really does go back to speak to the culture and the brand in terms of you are really living out who you say that you are. And again, you create these loyalists every time. They want to be known. They want you to know them. And I feel that even from a retention standpoint, I feel that empathy from managers has just hit like the number one spot that everybody wants. And that really comes back to, do you know me? Do you know what I'm struggling with? Do you know what I'm happy about? Do you know that I'm sad? You know, do you know these things? And that connectedness is something that some of our managers do struggle with because they're so focused on the, you know, day-to-day and operations and this, and we have to do this. But again, the people who are executing that are the ones that want that care and want that empathy and that personalization.
Changing topics, we've written a lot about childcare and the challenges. There are so few opportunities or open slots for children in this community right now, and they're coveted. How does that play into a company's position on flexibility in terms of, gosh, I need to show up a little bit late because I'm dropping off my kid here. It's my only childcare opportunity. Or I got to pick up a little bit early. Just talk about adaptability and flexibility when it comes to such an important part of life for so many people and so many of your employees, and they really have very few options right now.
So I'm going to give you an example, and this kind of combines several questions you've talked about here, and that's how important is it to the C-suite and our CEO to create this type of culture, as well as a personal experience and creating that for your workforce. So yesterday, my boss, who is the CEO, I had a meeting with him at 3:30. And I said, hey, look, I pick up my daughter from school at 3 o'clock. Is there any way we can change these meetings on Mondays? Because I work from home on Mondays and Fridays. And that's my opportunity to pick up my daughter. She doesn't have to go to Latchkey, right? And so you know what he says? Oh, absolutely. Let's just move that to Tuesdays. It'll be ongoing, totally fine. So it's that type of flexibility and culture that starts at the top, and then it trickles down through the managers. And I know that I am empowered to work with my staff to be able to create that environment to say, hey, look, if your employee comes to you and says, hey, I can't get into the office until 8:30 in the morning, great. Because they're dropping off kids, great, do it. Let them work until 5:30 at night or whenever your shift is over with. Work with them on appointments and going to the doctor. But it's creating that and empowering the managers mm-hmm. to be able to say, yeah, you know what, let's work together versus, you know, hey, no, I'm sorry, you've got to do that on your own time. So.
I think it's critical to have that from the top down, and we're so fortunate in our situation that, you know, even our president, he has young kids, and it'll be that 3:30, 4 o'clock time. He's like, oh, crap, I got to go and pick up. He disappears so quick. Like he doesn't linger around. He disappears, and it's even something that I do a poor job of. I know I need to leave, but I'm still here, right? And so living that out and showing that as part of the process is, you know, when we look at that, I'm going to have to start dropping off kids at, you know, 8:30 or so in the fall, right? Different schools, different times, and so we have to team up. Again, we employ humans that have lives outside of work that we have to accommodate. We don't want to get too far to the other side, you know, when you have that, we have an employee that, you know, had a child 16 months ago and is still on that work from home. I'm like, we got to get back into the office at some point, and just to be able to have those conversations, but it's challenging those individuals to respond. I want to give this to you, but we also have to have something, you know, from that piece. Absolute flexibility is the best. We want to do that, but we also want you to grow as an individual. And so it's balancing that, but again, living it out in every layer of your organization.
Are there things that can be done? You know, not every company can open their own childcare within a business, but are there other things that can be done to help an employee who is having an awful time finding a childcare slot or anything like that?
It's just, you know, it comes down to just that leaders leading with that sense of flexibility and understanding that there are going to be phases in life that, you know, everyone has to live through and have those types of challenges, especially parents these days. And so
I think it's just having that level of empathy and understanding, right, of, okay, it doesn't have to be this black and white prescription. You know, it's really just catering to the needs of your people, knowing what they care about, what they need. And I think somebody said it earlier, but it's like sometimes leaders are, it's a sense of fear of, well, if I allow this person, mm-hmm. oh, then everybody, no, like, here's how we have this conversation responsibly. And just kind of applying those common sense approaches to those situations can really just, you know, it really doesn't have to be quite the crisis situation we imagine.
One more question, and we'll go out to the audience for questions. We've talked about the talent cliff this morning. What does that do in your own minds in terms of, we've got to keep our good people. We've got to do everything possible to go above and beyond to keep those top-notch employees happy and here and working for us.
I mean, I personally lived this out. 2019, in my career, working, everything going well, but wanting more and yearning, and I want that. I want to be able to provide for my family. So I left. I left Wichita, and it broke my heart. I mean, it really did. You don't know what this place is until you've been here, right? And so growing up here, it was kind of the understanding of, like, I don't want to force people to have to do that. We have to be thinking about what that is and get in the front of it. And so how do we start that process? We support programs in middle schools, right? Going in and educating about design and educating about, you know, those Legos that you play with that you love so much. I mean, you might be an architect, right? Walking through those and understandings, creating those packs to be able to give. And it's about educating what can be done in our backyard without having to pursue outside of our region. We're going to have to pursue. Don't get me wrong. I understand that. But for some of us, it's very difficult to move an individual to Wichita, right? So how do you start to understand the different dynamics of the cultures and everything like that? And so I just think it's critically important to be thinking about those things and how do you respond to that early on. We have to be in front of this. If we get behind, we will all collectively fail.
It's all about the value proposition, right? I mean, what is it that they need that's going to keep them here? And we all have a ceiling that we can't cross because then it becomes a diminishing return with this employee. So it's going back to that customization and that connectedness and understanding. I mean, we face this every day. There are things that we're not going to be able to accomplish in the most convenient, easy way possible for us of when we want to accomplish it if we do not have this talent and skill set here. So again, it's understanding, having those conversations. It's not always money. You know, it is the flexibility. It is the time off. It is understanding their needs. And sometimes that speaks louder than just pure money that's sent to them. Other times it's not. Other times it is about the salary. And there are times that you just have to come to the table and understand we can't do that. You know, we don't have all the money everywhere. But it comes back to that conversation. It's hard. I mean, we've won, we've lost, and it's just something that I think every company has to face. And then it is a setback in terms of where you want to grow, how you want to grow, how quick you want to grow. So again, it's weighing all of those things to understand what do you need to accomplish, what's the most important thing. What's the value proposition? Can we afford it?
Mm-hmm. And I think what's also important for us is connecting the mission back to the individual's position. And so if you don't feel like what you do matters to the organization or how you fit in, if that doesn't ring true with you and you just could, you're going to leave. And so creating that inclusion environment, that sense of belonging, that connectedness between the manager, the employee, other departments, and that holistic, we're moving and rowing in the same direction, then we're going to lose the employee because they're not going to feel like what they do matters. They're not going to feel like they belong, and it's not going to be a good space for them. And so it's just making sure that they know what our mission is. We all know we're rowing together and that we are connected and being inclusive in our efforts with respect to, you know, how we manage our relationships with each other in the organization.
And I just add that I think it's really important we need to look at innovation and adaptability in terms of our people processes and our people practices, not just our customer-facing practices. Organizations are really good at adapting to meet customer needs, but we have to look at our people as our internal customers that are just as important or critical to serving those external customers that drive our business.
What questions do you have? Jamie can bring a microphone to you.
Thanks for being here. I've enjoyed listening to you. So I'm really curious that this didn't come up. I think what's coming next for the workforce, I hear it loud and clear from even people that are just 5 years younger than me. Why do we work on Fridays, or why don't we work a half day? Are you all preparing for that, or have you already seen that with the work schedule changing?
I think one thing for us, we've always traditionally had this really weird policy called summer hours, that when school's out, we don't necessarily work on Fridays. So we already kind of had that built into the process, but now we're getting to the point of answering the question of, well, can we just do summer hours all year long, right? We go back and land this back on flexibility. Like, if we live that process of flexibility out, that you truly understand, you have a job to accomplish. And if you think you can do the things that on the side that you can do, if you can go and, you know, vacation, whatever it is, spend time with kids, whatever it may be, if you think you can do that and do your job, go for it, right? I want to work with you on that. And it's one of the biggest reasons why I'm so apprehensive putting in like a true work from home policy in place, because I want everybody to have their own story. I want everyone to have their own opportunity. And I don't want managers to hang their hat on this idea of like, well, this says we can only do this. We have to think outside of the box. And so I think we're prepared for it. We sell our time. We have to be client interfacing. That can be difficult to navigate. But again, it's about having those open lines of communications, understanding people's situations. Our managers having some of that forethought of, hey, this might come up. This might be that situation. We have to plan for those as well as an organization. But
anybody else want to talk about Fridays off?
So you're absolutely right. In fact, we get a lot of comments about, well, why can't we have a four-day work week or summer hours, John? That's an excellent concept, and we've had folks bring that up. And there have been times where our departments have had the flexibility to do some of that. I think it becomes difficult, though, when you've got a diverse workforce. So you've got some folks that have to be actually on the phones all day, you know, for 12 hours or whatever that time period is. And so it's balancing that department against somebody who isn't tied to the phones, and it's administrative purely. And so it's thinking through and finding innovative ways in which we can manage multiple departments in different ways. And I think you're exactly right. That's what we're doing. The conversations we're having is, how do we do things differently for this department versus this department and not get ourselves in trouble? I got to think about that from a legal perspective. Anyway,
that was her disclaimer.
Yeah.
So in the banking world, we're not there yet, because we do have all of our retail stores. And just like she said, from the back office to what we call the front office with our retail stores, the back office is supporting the retail when they're open. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next few years if banking actually, it's all about the customer, right? And when they want to do banking with them. So if they're moving more to a digital side and the retail branches aren't needed, then that's a shift. You know, we're here to serve the member and the customer. So my situation's a little bit more unique than everyone else's, because we do have stores. We have stores, and people have to be at the stores. It's not just the contact center. And if there are problems, you know, accounting needs to be there, IT needs to be there, marketing probably doesn't need to be there. They're not going to get Fridays off, But again, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the future, and I think that's going to be driven by the consumer side, the customer side, of how they're behaving, of how we're going to react and pivot from that.
And just to build on real quickly something that Jennifer said, thinking about those admin-heavy positions that are typically always in person, trying to be innovative around that. I mean, we have three out of 165 employees that have to work in the office. Receptionist roles, they have to be there as part of that process. We can't forget about them, right? It's unfair that, you know, when we have, you know, inclement weather, I can work from home, but they have to show up to do their job, right? And so we try to build in and think about those opportunities as well of, like, you know, we need a rotating schedule on those Fridays, on those off days, have a rotating schedule so that person can be able to take advantage of a flexible schedule as well or be in front of that. And so it's, again, being open-minded to those individual situations, but then understanding you're going to have some limitations within the business as well.
Any other questions? Have a couple. Oh, Jamie, you're going to get your steps in.
First of all, congrats on being the best companies to work for in Wichita. That's great. I couldn't help but notice that I didn't see any manufacturing companies represented in this group. So maybe I'm in the wrong industry. But wanted to address that. I think that the number right now is about 17% of jobs in Wichita are in manufacturing. And I think a lot of what you've shared today is really relevant for us on more of our salaried corporate functions. But a lot of our attrition struggles really lie in that manufacturing sector. So I'm wondering if you can share, and John, I think you might have hit on this a little bit in your last comment, but what you've spoken about could translate to us helping impact positively our attrition in the manufacturing roles.
Going back to the comment that I grew up here, right? You know, my mom and dad were both full-time workers. My mom is in HR. My dad worked at Cessna or Beechcraft at the time. But going through that process and watching how I grew up without a dad, right? He was constantly tied up in everything that was work because he was a shift line worker, right? That's part of the process. Growing up here, a lot of people have those experiences. And it's about going back to looking internally and sitting there and saying, like, how do I change that? I don't want to do that with my kids. I want to be there. I want to be involved. I want to understand. I want to leave at, like, today, 4 o'clock to go coach flag football, right? I want to do those things. And it's very difficult. You know, my previous employer down in Texas, we had 3 nuclear reactors on site. They had to be in the room. Butts in the chair were required, right? So, again, how do we think about offering different things? And it was just kind of that rotating shift off, day off, something that can be planned ahead for, or the opportunity to change your shifts very easily, trying to accommodate and find ways to, whether it's an app that kind of operates or whatever it may be, put a request in, think about those things. But we also have to be, as an employer, we have to be able to kind of plan that backup plan of, like, having a plan B in some of those situations, right? I want to allow my employees to do this, and how can we do that? It is very difficult even for us as, you know, responding to our clients when we're doing a large project of design. There's deadlines that are in place, right? And some of those deadlines, they have to take a priority. But again, it's trying to educate that piece into our employees to where they're bought in. They know they have to get this done because, again, they are doing it for their family. So is it an easy solution? No. But again, it's going back to understanding the lives of these individuals and how you can incorporate it just to make an awesome environment for them.
There was one up there.
Real briefly, as a strategy, I was just curious to know if any of you have any employee mentor programs, and if you could just give a high-level overview of what those programs consist of. For example, who can participate and who within your organization serves as mentors?
At AGH, over my career, we've had very formal mentor processes and very informal mentor processes, and I think it's gone back and forth for different reasons, but I've been a mentor for a number of women at AGH. I usually get paired with women because women face different challenges, and so it's good to have a partner that sees things the way that you see things. Typically, anyone could be a mentor when we had a more formal system structured. And we were asked to meet with our mentors monthly or every 6 weeks, and it wasn't formally structured what we talked about or what we did. And my focus as a mentor is always just trying to help the individual with the needs that they currently have, and usually those revolve mostly around work, but sometimes they're about personal things as well because, again, we're humans, so that intersects. And I would say it's more informal at this point in some of my mentoring, but certainly anyone would be open to it.
Anybody else?
I'll just comment that we are in the process of putting a mentor program in place. Traditionally, we've had a very hands-off approach of training and development. And what we've seen, and I'll own this as a younger individual myself coming from that generation, there was a lot of things our parents didn't teach us, right? And sometimes you walk into a workforce and somebody says some crazy shit. And you're like, wait a second now. Like, you think about that. Come on. And so it's going back and understanding, like, we have to be responsible to teach some of that as well, right? I'm an unorthodox HR person. I'll say that. when you think about that and try to just plug in, like, truly understand those situations to be able to really speak to them. So,
last one. Oh, sorry, we'll get you too.
I wanted to ask, how do you determine flight risk within your organizations? So you guys are the best employers, you know, people want to come work for you. When in the day do you guys determine that your employees are going to want to leave? Is that during performance reviews, one-on-ones? How do you guys determine that?
I don't know if it's as much of a necessarily flight risk, but our culture is feedback, relevant and timely feedback. And so we strive to get our managers to be constantly talking to employees so it's never a surprise. It's not a surprise for them. It's not a surprise for us. And so based on that, you know, there's not a formal, we used to have a formal, you know, every quarter you must have a review and then you must turn in your annual to HR, and HR is the annual keeper. We do have those annual reviews, but we also have very relevant touch bases, weekly, monthly, whatever is necessary for that employee and that manager to connect, and that way nothing is ever a surprise. And so that, I think, in the last few years has really led us to be more in tune with, is an employee thinking about leaving? I get the sense that they're not happy. How do I create a better space for them? Is it career development? Those types of issues kind of come to the surface. But it's making sure that we're having those connections on a regular basis.
So strategically, we have outlined specific employees that are critical to the mission of what we're trying to accomplish within a strategic time frame. So these could be special projects, big projects, long-term projects. When you can start to see those employees disengage, you know, usually those people are the high performers, they're passionate, they're involved, they're this, and when you start to see a behavior shift, that's your first red flag, and that's a dangerous red flag. And so that's where their managers are keyed in, because again, those managers are responsible for those projects and those strategic initiatives that we have done. They need those critical people there. So it's learning to know what those behaviors are, having those conversations, going back to that conversation, that connectedness, that understanding. You know, you can't just see the red flag and then go in and say, hey, I see that this is happening. You know, you need to have that relationship already built. And I think that's probably one of the most important things that we've done is, again, strategically, executive team and the managers understand who's critical for what we need to accomplish, and then understanding what needs to happen to get it done.
I've always talked about within my companies is the idea of continuous career conversations, right? And what fits into that category, right? When you're on the way to a project with a subordinate or whatever it is, and you're having conversations about, hey, this didn't go well in this project, but this was great, working through those things, we never document those conversations, right? And if we did, they would be pushing us towards having an agreement of where this person is existing within our ecosystem, right? And so I think it's very important that we allow our leaders to not, we don't want to put so much emphasis on that yearly review or waiting to have a conversation. Let's educate how to have difficult conversations and then start to document when we do have the small conversations. Because when you document that and you click a few buttons in the systems, you just created your performance review, right? You can be reminded of those tough conversations. You can be reminded of those issues that came up. And the best part about it is, you are involving the individual that's on the other side of that conversation. You know what? I do remember when we talked about that, and I didn't reach that goal this year. That's something to work towards. People should always know how they're doing.
It's such a two-way street when it comes mm-hmm. to development of, you know, we look for the talent, right, when we're recruiting of, you know, those folks that really have that, again, that passion and that drive and that just intrinsic fire. And so it's very much a, you know, we try to empower our team members to take charge of their own careers, carve their own path to success, right? But the leader needs to provide that environment for folks to thrive, right? Here's the tools you need. Here's the resources. Here's the mentors, you know, that you might, you know, be aligned with. So they're providing that. But then, right, no one is going to know your strengths or your limitations like your own self. And so that's what we try to kind of empower our team members to understand is, what are your strengths? Yes, what are your weaknesses? But then double down on what you're great at. Know exactly what you're passionate about and what you just lights you up, you know, at the end of the day. And then communicate that, right? Dialogue solves a lot. So, you know, those meetings and one-on-ones, you know, constantly stay tied out like you guys are talking about. And that way, right, nothing's a surprise. You guys are always in, you know, team member, supervisor are always in that lockstep status of, yep, I know exactly where I'm at and where I'm supposed to be. And then by extension, I'm fulfilled because I know how my role is creating value for the company.
Last one.
Thank you. Considering the current state of student loan debt, the educational cliff, IDE initiatives, is there a place for people who do not have a formal 4 to 8 year education to be top leaders? And if not, how do we bridge the gap?
Yeah, you know, I think, again, capturing them early on and showing them a way, right? I went into school not knowing what I was going to do at all. We had this idea. We were a young married couple. We wanted to start a family. I needed to make money, right? We had to figure that out. So I'm 3 or 4 classes away from a mechanical engineering degree myself, right? I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to go down that path. And to be totally honest, I learned more in human resources on the job than I did at school, hands down. And understanding what that is knowing that there could be different paths of success. And it, again, it's looking at what a person has to provide. You know, I have an HR team member, a culture champion. He is not in HR. And if you look at his past, if you look at even some of the mannerisms, things he says, I'm like, we're in HR. Like, but it's going back to, he has the passion, the drive for people, right? He shouldn't be in this role, but he's the perfect person for this role because I understood who he was. And so, again, it's going back to, you don't need that education, in my opinion, right? There's certain things that require it. Architecture requires it, right? But what do you care about? How do you live your life? Like, those things are more important to understand of a person coming into a job. And you should be, as an employer, you should be able to teach the things that you need to have on the job.
I think that's an uphill battle. I think that's a difficult thing, especially coming from our industry of banking. You know, we're backed by a board. We have a board. And I think it would be incredibly difficult to have a CEO that was not formally educated. Typically, they even have a graduate degree. I know that is old school as old school can get, but I don't see that changing anytime soon. And I think it has to do with not only just the responsibility, but the fiscal responsibility that happens, especially from the banking industry. All of those things, yes, can be learned, but there's a certain element of credibility that still exists within education when you're talking about a CEO in top-tier position for certain industries. When you think of like a fintech or a startup or something like that, they don't have to have degrees, they have to have passion. But then when you start getting into regulations and a board, you know, that becomes very formal. And so I don't know how to separate that formal piece of that from the education piece of what's needed for that.
Thank you, panelists. How about a round of applause for this panel?